safety words.
Hello? Testing? You hear me? Testing.
Just give me a thumbs up when you're ready to start.
Okay, we'll wait just maybe a couple of minutes. Okay.
Yeah.
Good. Okay. So I think we're ready. Okay. So, hello, good afternoon, everybody. My name is Alvaro, or Alvaro, whatever you prefer, or even AHT, that's how many people also call me, that are my initials, and every single email I have starts with the same three letters. And I'm going to talk today about ORMs. Interesting stuff, probably. However, to be honest, I don't really know what I'm doing here, because I'm not a DBA. Well, I just happen to use databases, PostgreSQL, sometimes. But probably most of you, or all of you, are probably far better than me in using databases than using PostgreSQL. So please don't ask tough questions about PostgreSQL to me. Now, ORMs are tools that are used by developers, application developers. And I'm not a good application developer, too. Mainly because I spend my time doing all the things like team management and so on. So please also don't ask tough questions about application development. I'll try to answer them anyway. So what I'm doing here, then, you may ask. Because indeed, I'm going to talk about ORMs, not PostgreSQL. So adding up all those three things, as I said, what I'm doing here. Well, what I'm trying to do here is to give an opinion about an open discussion that is going on. It's gaining momentum on the net, and I just happen to know a bit about databases and a bit about application development. And in my opinion, that's enough to be able to talk about both worlds, see what one needs, what the other one needs, and that may be interesting. So I hope you enjoy and like this point of view. So, during the talk, I'll try to split my mind sometimes between what a developer and a DBA will say or think. So in order not to confuse you and even not to confuse my mind, what I'll do is sometimes I'll just talk as a DBA, okay? While when I need to speak as a developer, I will use Duke to speak. So, just in case you don't get confused. Me neither. So, to ORM or not to ORM, that's the question. So, what a wonderful world. You know, we're living in a wonderful world because, you know, most applications process data. Indeed, I don't know of any useful application that don't process data. Okay. Now, about those applications that use data, most, or at least a lot of applications that use data, need to persist data. So far, so good. What else? There are many ways, of course, to store or persist data. One of those is the SQL relational model. And it seems to work quite well. It's well known, has a long history, it's proven, it scales, and, well, so on. It gives you a lot of powerful features. So it's a good way to store data. And as such, it addresses most of these needs. However, application developers found quite hard to use databases. We'll see many reasons why that's hard. And they were trying to find solutions to that. And finally, ORMs came to the rescue. So, well, it's a wonderful world. We've got everything. We have a need, which is to process data. Then we have another need, which is to persist data. And then we have databases with would satisfy that need, but were hard to use. And then ORMs came to the rescue, and right now, supposedly at least, they are easy to use. So application developers are right now happy. As I said, data may be safely persisted. Databases also provide a lot of power and complementary features along to persist data, such as concurrency management and a powerful query language, which is a very special topic here on ORMs, because SQL was designed as a language, a high-level language, very close to human speaking, more or less. And it's probably one of the best tools to manage data. But at some points, developers try to think of SQL as a strange thing and try to manipulate data with more using a more general approach, such as using general-purpose languages. And, well, they're not as well suited to process data as SQL may be. But as we were saying, this is wonderful. We've got everything. We've got a lot of power from the database. And then ORMs make the databases very easy to use. So what a wonderful world this would be, as the song says. You know what song I'm talking about? Sam Cooke's What a Wonderful World This Would Be. Don't know much about history. Don't know much about biology. And so on. And the song says, what a wonderful world this would be. But it's not. Last year, exactly 1 year ago, more or less, while I was here at PGCon, I was chatting with some developers, such as you, DBAs, sorry. And during that conversations, I listened to something very similar to this. Developers, application developers, cry about the performance of the databases administered by DBAs. But it's not DBA's fault. DBAs say it's ORM's fault. And this thing, my mind running, start thinking about this thing. And, well, I end up here 1 year after. So it's a very interesting theme, very interesting topic. And it all started here, is that DBAs are complaining about ORMs. Unfortunately, problems that don't come alone, and there are more problems. This is something that developers say, which is ORMs are supposed to offer an abstraction, which is everything is an object. Now, that abstraction, as we'll see, is difficult to hold. And there are some times where you have to break that abstraction. Then, of course, the power that comes with that abstraction is lost. How do they do it? Well, you know, ORMs are not able to do this. So what we do is just grab a session and issue directly a query to the database. Of course, that's completely breaking the abstraction. So, you know, the model does not really hold on in that cases. And Finally, and this is very, very worrisome, there are some developers that, after they see all the problems that databases causes to them and the problems they face with fighting with the DBAs, and after the ORM is not able to support the abstraction all the time, and so on, they say, well, let's not even use a database. After all, the ORM made it so simple, at first at least, to use databases, that, well, let's not use them. I mean, they're so simple. I just use them only to store data. It's a data store. I don't use powerful queries, data validation, triggers, functions. I don't use any of those. I just use it to store data and retrieve data. So why use a database? There are more simple products to store data and read data. Of course, they don't realize the power they're losing. But it's just a very common conception. So it's not a wonderful world, unfortunately. So, let's go to the roots. What is an ORM? ORM, of course, it stands for Object Relational Mapping. So, what's an object? This. Well, it shouldn't be called a class. It's really a type. A class is a live instance. But in order for everybody to understand you myself better, let's say it's a class. So, a class, such as in this case purchase, contains some fields, or also called properties, like the purchase number, or the customer ID, or the purchase date, or so on. Of course, those fields or properties have their data type associated with them. And what the ORM does is map these fields or properties to a database. How? Well, what they do is map each class, it's mapped to a table, and each property is mapped to a column. Isn't it? Looks natural. Looks good. We'll prove later that it's not. But it looks good. So, where do ORMs come from? Where it all started? Of course, ORMs were mostly developed in the application developers world, and they were designed, of course, then to suit their needs. The first one of those, it's automatic query generation. So if you remember from one of my first slides, I was saying that at first, databases were hard to use. Well, they were hard to use because you had to write a lot of repetitive queries and code to map those queries. So, before ORMs, what application developers did was write all the queries, where most of the time were very repetitive, create, read, update, delete, grab them in. Oh, of course, all of you know what that's that meaning. So, to write all those queries is a very repetitive process. And as being repetitive, it is a candidate for systematization or refactoring or automatization. So, one desired goal is automatic query generation. Together with that comes translating the data types from the database to the object world, which are the same, but more or less. You know, an integer is an integer. Well, yes, there are some exceptions, but it is. Timestamp is a date. Well, there are some subtle differences. There are more big differences, but more or less those types map well to each other. So it's not only possible to write automatic queries, but it's also possible, or at least desirable, to also do the data conversion automatically. So this was the first goal. Next goal was security and error management. When you do queries to the database, you have to attend to a lot of possible errors on the database. Many things can go wrong. Permissions, wrong names for tables, columns, bad SQL expressions, constraint violations, and so on. So it's also desirable for ORMs to add code to ease the management of this kind of errors about the database. Of course, database connections and so on. Then we go up a higher level and we enter again into the world of application developers, where they want to have a powerful abstraction. As in every possible program, it's easier to follow the divide and conquer model and try to provide layers of abstraction, where each layer takes a responsibility very precise. So, following, for example, the MVC model, developers want to have data in the M part, the model. So they want the model to encapsulate all the logic related to talking to the database. So fetching data, writing data, updating data from the database, all should be hidden inside the M layer of the MVC model, part of the application, so that developers that are writing the V or the C layer don't even know or realize that there's a database underneath. That's the ideal world. They should not know about the database and just use some magic objects that happen to persist data to a database. But that's a detail of implementation. So it's also a goal to add an abstraction. And finally, there's the goal of database independence. So if ORMs are well designed, they should be able to use any database. Indeed, they should be able to use any data store, be it a relational database or not. So it is a goal to be able to change databases. We'll discuss about that later too. Then, what's the deal? What's going on? What's wrong with ORMs? Let's say, DBAs. What they think about ORMs. The first I mentioned problem is performance problems. How many of you have had performance problems related to ORMs? Please raise your hand. Wow. Probably most of you. So I don't need to say anything else about this. There are performance problems related to ORMs. We'll see who's the fault afterwards. We'll try to. And there's another problem, a very big problem, in my opinion, for DBAs, is that, well, it looks like we're losing our jobs. Because some years ago, before ORMs, DBAs were creating the database schemas and the database. They were designing them. Indeed, there was a design process. Now, there's not. You know, it is the application developers who come, sit in front of their IDE, write a class, a POJO, plain old Java object, for example. This is a very simple thing to write. And then you add some annotations, some reserved words that start with an app. And then it magically creates a database. So far, so good. So at first it looks like, wow, this is amazing. With very simple lines of code added to my regular lines of code, I create a database. Now, what's the problem with that? Well, the problem is that programmers are creating databases. And most programmers are not DBAs. So probably their SQL or even relational knowledge is not very good. So as a consequence, databases created by these programmers are probably not going to be very good databases. So, if programmers are creating databases and probably they're not doing a good job, DBAs are left without their job of creating databases. So, of course, it's a problem. Now, what problems do developers face? Well, the first problem they see is that they're not really exploiting the power of the database. First of all, because they create the database, and usually it's a very simple database, denormalized and so on. So they just use, well, columns, basic data types, and that's it. So they're losing a lot of power. They're using 1% of the database, 2% of the database. So, you know, it's a loss of opportunity to not be able to exploit that power of the database. And the other problem, which is related to the first one, is that developers, we perceive the database as a very slow thing. It's damn slow. They don't realize it may be a problem of their ORMs doing fancy things. They just think the database is slow. It's a very heavyweight thing. To the point that they start questioning again themselves, why to use it? So there are cheaper solutions that are maybe faster than a database. So let's use them. Oh, those kind of solutions don't add durability, or they don't do concurrency, or they don't do transactions. Who cares? We don't use it anyway. We use ORMs. ORMs are magic tools that do all that for you. So there's nothing you have to do. So why use databases? And I've seen a lot of developer groups that are moving away from databases because they don't see the benefit of using a database at all. Then, who's the fault? Are ORMs guilty? Are ORMs just capable of fixing all these problems so they are not guilty? Is it just that the tool is not correctly used? And this is probably one of the most strongest arguments that ORM supporters give, is that, well, no, you know, ORMs are able to do all those things right. And, well, I may agree with that. But the problem is that if ORMs can make all those things happen in the right way, why isn't things happening the right way? That's a good question. So, is the tool guilty? Are ORMs guilty? And no, let's ask some questions. So, first question. Please raise your hands. Who uses knives? You don't. You use hands to eat all the time? Okay, just kidding. So, everybody seems to use a knife. Good. How many of you, out of those who use knives, could live without knives? Please raise your hand again. You could. Good, too. Then you may go to a cave and, you know, knock some rocks or something like that. But it's good. It's good. You're flexible. Now, most people use knives, and it would be hard to live without them. Now, next question. Who uses knives to kill people? Hey, you were going to raise... No, I'm just kidding again. So, none of you. So, summary. Most people use knives. And most people need them to operate in their daily lives. But only very few people, unfortunately, I mean, it's unfortunate that they use it to kill people. Not that there are very few. But very few people, very, very few, use knives in the wrong way. So, should we ban knives? Well, my opinion, no. Because there's people who use them the right way. Most of the people using the right way. But what happens with ORMs? It's mostly a parallel way, but on the other side. It's a lot of developers use ORMs. And most developers want, or at least need, to use ORMs. And the results are not good. As I say, there are a lot of problems. And although you may argue that all ramps let you do things right, something which is, of course, not 100% true at least, still most people do it the wrong way. So, in my opinion, that's the fault of all our ramps. They are not done the right way because people use it the wrong way. So they are not good. So there is at least a need to reshape all our ramps. Okay, let's move on. Let's get into the details. Then what's really wrong with all our ramps? And let's play a game. Let's play right and wrong. It's a very easy game. I'm going to show some statements about all ramps, and I want to gather your opinion, whether that statement is okay or not okay. I mean, it's right or wrong. So, whoever thinks it's right, please mum a little bit, like, okay? And then I'll do the same for the ones who think it's wrong. And then, the louder it becomes one answer, that will be the outcome of the poll. So, here are the questions. Map data types and create automatic SQL. So, this is the ability that all ramps have to create automatically queries for insert, delete, update, whatever, select, of course. And also the automatic conversion from SQL data types to class data types. So, who thinks this is right? Please, ma'am. Okay. Who thinks it's wrong? Okay. I need a volunteer. You? To decide what you think it was louder. Oh?
Is the question, should they do them or are they doing right?
Are they doing right? I mean, or should, no, you're right, should they include this capability? Okay, in my opinion, that was right. And I agree. It's right. So, next question. Create the database automatically, which means that you write some annotations in your code, and you hit a button, and, well, all the database schema gets created. So, who thinks this is right? And who thinks this is wrong? Well, I completely agree. That's definitely wrong. In my opinion, it's a DBA's job to create databases, not programmer's job. Of course, you can be you can split your mind and be a DBA and a developer at the same time, but you're still becoming a DBA when you create database. So in my opinion, that's still wrong. And what about the third question? Programmed query languages. Most ORMs include some tools or part of the API they include is the ability to create queries. But as long as ORMs try to hold on the abstraction that everything's an object, they try to create queries in the object of abstraction. And there are some solutions to this problem. There are some ways to do it, different ways. I don't know which one is better, but there are some of those. What I know is that they require a lot of effort to do. So, who thinks this is right? Okay. Who thinks it's wrong? Okay. None of you got to the right solution. In my opinion, it's just damn stupid. Why is that? You know, it's so complicated to try to create queries in an object-oriented fashion that none of the solutions really works. The best solutions available only use a minimum subset of what SQL could do. So they're not powerful enough. But at the same time, they're stupid because it's a waste of effort. They're investing in, many, many, many hours of developer time just trying to reinvent the wheel. And they're trying to reinvent SQL. Why not use SQL directly? It's not that big deal. ORMs should be used to map the results of an SQL query to classes. That's it. We don't need to reinvent the SQL language in an object-oriented fashion. Well, then ORMs are not perfect because it's not an all objects parting. Well, that's not a big deal. So, let's get into part two, defines. And let's start with the database features. The first one, it should be already clear by now. It's the developers who are creating the databases. Of course, with ORMs, you're more or less able, and we'll show later how more or how less. You're able to let a DBA create the database. But usually, I don't know, 90, 95%, 98% of the people who uses ORMs are developers, and they create the databases. So that's a big problem, in my opinion. Now, it's even worse because it's very difficult. I don't mean it's impossible. And, well, at least some of the things are impossible. But let's say it's just difficult. It's difficult to use some, what may be considered some basic to a medium SQL features. Such as, for example, domains or validated data types. It's very hard to use them, if possible. And it should be, I don't know, I mean, it's basic to create a database with some strongly validated types. But it's hard to do it. Nobody does it. Nobody, of which I know. Functions. You should be able to call functions, SQL functions. It's not that hard. You probably use it every day. Well, you could call functions from SQL code, but then you're not going to be able to map them easily to classes. So it's hard to do it. Conclusion, nobody does it. Triggers, okay, completely forget about those. It's almost impossible to use triggers within ORMs. I mean, not to use them. I mean to support them. So that if you try to insert in a table which fires up before insert trigger that does some checks, the only solution, the only practical solution is to hard code all those tests in your object. But you'd have to do it by hand, completely by hand. So nobody does it. Custom aggregates, exactly the same problem. Roles, there are some very interesting things you can do with roles. You all know there was, there have been some talks about those things. And, well, in the ORM world, nobody uses roles. Nobody uses permissions. Connection pooling is done with a single user. Everything is done with a single user, a single role. And, well, you know, all the implications and security considerations that that has. So it's a big problem. You're very limited in what you can use with ORMs. So, performance. Critical to DBAs. Why ORMs perform so badly? Well, there are many reasons. First one, they do joins everywhere. We all know that joins are quite expensive. And it's a Cartesian product. And they use them mostly everywhere. So even if they don't need joins. I've seen that there's a new feature coming to PostgreSQL 9.0 which tries to optimize joins, requests that are not used on tables that are not used, so they are not fit into the query planner. That's good, but it should be fixed on all our aims. There's one solution to avoid the use of joins, and in my opinion, it's far worse than the original problem, which is lazy loading. What lazy loading provokes in an ORM is hundreds or hundreds of thousands of extra select or subselect queries. Why? Because in the ORM world, you try to model entities or objects as a single unit. So, for instance, a person, it's a person, and they have name, surname, address, telephone, email, and dependently of a database structure where, for example, the address table has been normalized and it's an external table. So when I see a user from the programming perspective, I want to see just one thing, not three things or seven things because the database has been normalized. I want to see one thing, the person. Now, what ORMs do, and by default they do it this way to avoid joins, is that foreign keys are lazily loaded, which means only if you request that column or information from that other table. But if you're, for example, doing a searching within a list, and then you start asking for those properties, you're going to fire a lot of select queries or sub-select queries to get that information. So that's even worse. Well, that's hard, but they don't do it. They don't batch queries into transactions. I know it's hard, but it's desirable. For example, if you traverse a list and you try to modify some properties within that list, and then you go and try to persist that information, it will do a lot of queries and not group them in a transaction. There are ways to do it. But it's the developer who, in the V or C layer of the MVC abstraction, will not know that there's a database underneath and will not know that there are ways to avoid that. So most people will issue a lot of queries without a transaction. Or sometimes ORMs, and this is quite frequent too, they will issue many updates where a little bit more clever statement would suffice, which is, for example, an update where condition. So instead of doing update where, they do a lot of updates. Well, I mean, with a where on ID, but not where on another condition that may be applied one statement to the full table. So they create a lot of performance problems because all of these things. There are, of course, many more, but I think these are the most important ones. Now, it's not only because of the implementation, but also because of the way the abstraction works and how ORMs are shaped up in a conceptual way. And it's that, as I said, the abstraction tries to hide the other layers of the application development to hide from the fact that there is a database underneath. So, for example, if I were to use a model from the M layer that it's already constructed, I may see that it returns a list, for example, which translates to a select star or select columns from table. Now, if I see a list, I know, as a Java programmer, for example, that there's a size method of out of list that let me know the number of elements in that list. So I will use that method to call and get the number of instances on that list. What that will do is what will select all the columns, at least not foreign keys, from that table, copy them to the application space, convert all those data types, and then count the list instead of doing a select count star. And this is not an implementation detail. This is because they're offering a pure object-oriented abstraction. Question? Well, they do. Yeah, I mean, you're right that there are some implementations that do it this way. Probably most, nowadays, most of them. But it's an example that this abstraction is very dangerous. I mean, of course it's desirable, but it may be a problem. And they can do that because they return sets, which is an interface instead of a class. But some, and I've seen a lot of code that programmers, instead of returning a set, they do return a list. And then if you call size, it will iterate over the whole collection after copying it from database space to application space.
Couldn't the developer as a DBA
Excuse me?
Yes. Can they still make that same mistake? Any developer that can run select star.
Of course, but then if they do that query directly, what they are doing is breaking the abstraction model. Well, yes, but ORMs, what are trying is to completely isolate the programmer from the querying database, from even knowing that there's a database.
But as I said, if size was implemented efficiently, then the developer wouldn't have to do it.
Right, right. But as I said, there are
so
a lot of...
distractions.
Exactly. There are many, many, many of those. And the problem is that the user who's going to use this list doesn't really know what's underneath. So tries to use that methods in the usual way. And that's correct from its perspective. But it may lead to a lot of inefficiencies and performance problems.
Just because that's an example, give another example. Just say you had a list.average. They gave you an average of some value in the list. You don't know how that's implemented behind the scenes. But if you did it directly in SQL, you're going to take the advantage of that aggregate function, which is going to run about as optimally as possible. For all you know, your ORM might pull all the rows into the application space and do a map in the application space. Which, again, it's just an example.
But my point is you fix your ROM.
Yeah. But then you come into the problem of custom aggregates, custom functions, and so on. So it's very difficult to create a general solution to this problem. And what you were saying, it's pretty valid, and it's exactly the same thing. The next thing I was going to say, which is a lot of application code is doing sorting or filtering, which could be done inside the database much more efficiently. Well, that's a different question. That's a different question. Right. I mean, if you're doing something like MapReduce or something like that, well, yes, it may be worth to...
MapReduce is not about efficiency.
Right. It's about...
It's about solving the problem with the brute force of throwing those servers at it rather than about being efficient.
Exactly. So in general, and leaving apart some cases, it's desirable to do these operations, sorting, filtering, or whatever, aggregating or averaging or whatever, in the database, that in application space. And ORMs... or code that uses ORMs tend to do these things in application space. And finally, the abstraction, which is the motto of ORMs, everything's an object and you can completely hide the database, it's not true, because very frequently it's broken. As you said, okay, do a select count star. Well, then you're breaking abstraction. It's very, very common. So it's, well, you know, it's in the middle of nowhere.
Well, that's how you have to abstract.
Question? Well,
I would disagree because the answer is much more nuanced than that because an ORM can produce the exact perfect SQL, but it actually matters what the database implementation is. I mean, one of our difficulties with ORMs is that we have to very frequently use indexes. Mind you, this is not Postgres, right? But the ORM could be producing perfect SQL, but the database implementation can't use it. I mean, we have instances where even our Postgres, you know, which doesn't have indexes, has other nuances that requires certain SQL fixes to make perfect SQL in an abstract work well in a particular implementation.
That's why you can't build a database vector, you can't build a location vector.
I think the whole point of that
And there are, I would say that that there are some ORMs who do these things right. Well, yes, but then there are two other problems left. First, there's a social problem. Most code that use ORMs do very weird things. So that's a social problem. Maybe not the direct fault of ORMs. But then there's another problem. There are many other things they don't do it the right way. We'll keep moving. So.
But most code that uses SQL does crazy things
too. Oh, yeah?
It's all crap, no matter what.
It's all crap. Good. Okay. More problems. About the database schema. There are also some problems about ORMs in related to schema management. First of all, is that it's very useful to find denormalized schemas created because of databases are created from Java code or .NET code, and that leads to poor design schemas. Because there is the need to map classes that inherit from another classes, and there is no inheritance. Well, you know, we all know that there's inheritance in Postgres. But in general, there is no inheritance in relational databases. So it's very hard to map a class or a hierarchy of classes to tables in a database. And you have to go through a lot of different options, where most of them end up using either discriminator columns, which in turn they produce a lot of nulls inside a database, and we all know that's not very good. So that's another problem. Inheritance is very hard to map to relational model. And last but not least, it creates a lot of problems with deployment. Incremental deployment. Deploying application code is very easy. Just copy a file and you're done. But deploying the application code is very hard because if you're deploying to a live database, you have to do alters and drops and creates and so on. And you cannot hit that magic button you were hitting during development that says create the database from scratch. Now, the developer is faced with the problem of having to alter a live database. And he don't even knows about SQL. He created database, but right now he's faced with a weird problem. Doesn't know how to do it. So the usual answer is they don't do it. And the application starts crashing, and then they fix it, and so on. So it's not a very good solution. And it also leads to SQL abandonment. And after all these problems, some developers are just going to look at object-oriented databases or NoSQL because, after all, it's not that easy to use. And you can't use a lot of advanced SQL features. It does not perform well. And, well, the abstraction, that's not really whole. So what they do is blame SQL, not the ORMs. And they go to other solutions. This is a conversation I had some days ago with a friend of mine. It's a very illustrative of what's going on. And people trying to reinvent a wheel or invent a squared wheel. This is a conversation. My friend was saying, I'm using a database as the portal's backend, but news are stored within an XML file. Wait, what did you say? Yes, news are simple. Why bother with a DB? Indeed, they are not relational. But how do you handle related news, categories, and tags? Well, it's easy. Within the flat XML, we store foreign keys and some data constraints. You see? Because the database is hard to use, they try to run away. But then they have to reinvent the wheel. And finally, the myth of database independence. Well, as long as ORMs have to offer a standardized set of features among the database they support, they have to restrict themselves to a minimum core functionality. That's a huge problem, especially if you consider MySQL as a database, which it doesn't. Oh, I told myself don't say this, but I said I'm so sorry about that. So yes, This is a big problem, of course, because they use a very, very limited subset of the features that SQL offers. And this is also always only done to achieve database independence. But, I mean, seriously, who really changes the database? It's not something we do every day. Well, yes, I know there are some cases, but is it really worth the effort to do it? Good point. Thank you.
Or
Sybase. Or Sybase. Yeah, okay.
For example, if you have a major workload installed, you must switch to PostgreSQL.
Yeah,
I mean. It's impossible unless you've been
connected. Yeah, that's good. But, you know, I don't know if it's worth the effort. I think it's not. Yeah, but it's probably more worth the effort to do some manual tweaking to change the database than to have it abstracted and then lose a lot of power from the database. That's what I mean. That's it. Now, you'll save $10 million, but you're not investing a lot of effort writing ORMs and limiting them to a small subset of features just to be able to automatically, instead of manually, change the database. I mean, database independence in general is good, but doing so automatically in on ORMs.
I agree with you.
Okay, that's a real problem. Some people say that they use a different database in testing and production. Well, that's not saying anyway. And indeed, ORMs already have a specific database engines, so they are not that database independent. Or at the same time, it's easy not to be that independent. So. Let's move on. Let's show some code. We're running a little bit late, but let's show some code. Let's show some how probably an average user will find ORMs. So assumptions. First of all, we're going to assume that the database should be created by a DBA, not a developer. Okay, I think that's a good assumption. And we're not trying to do a special tweaking or some advanced ORM knowledge because average user don't have that knowledge. We're trying to advocate for a tool that is, by default, easy or correct to use. And we're going to use Hibernate, which is probably the most used ORM. So, first test. Create table not working full integer bar integer. Result. ORM did not map the table. Why? Because it lacks a primary key. I can't create a table with a primary key. Well, I don't know how much sense it is or not. There are use cases, of course, but, well, the ORM can cope with that. Next test. Simple test. Create table, simple test, full integer primary key. Now there's a primary key, bar text. And basically, what the ORM creates automatically for you is something like this. So you get the foo method, which returns an integer, and a bar method, which returns a string. Looks good. There are some annotations around here. Unique true, nullable false. That's the primary key. It's got an ID. Okay. So it looks good. And it works. If you fill in an object of this type, and try to write it to the database, say persist, then this query is easy to the database. Okay, so it works. So far, so good. Next test. Let's use a sequence. We'll know that PostgreSQL uses a sequence. So let's use a sequence. Create that very simple table that calls a sequence. The generated code is this one, and the results, it always tries to insert a zero. Well, yes, it's easy to overcome this. You have to manually tweak the XML file, and it will work. But then, it's not by default working. So it's not an easy tool to use. Let's do something fancy. let's try to create a voucher of 9 characters maximum length. It's pretty rare, isn't it? And let's do a column check, column constraint. Well, the results are really discouraging. It doesn't work. Not only this query, it's not even checking the length of the string. Yes, there are some indicators here that the length of a string, it's at maximum 9, but the code, it's not checking it. And these queries are being issued to the database. This is directly from the picture log. Question? Okay, so you want me to answer as a developer. Well, my opinion as a developer is that data validation should happen, of course, in the database, but also on the application layer. If not, first of all, you're going to be hitting the database many more times than you like. And you will be able to do more fine-grained error reporting to the user if you do it on the application level. So in my opinion, you have to do it both. Well, if you're using like MVC or something like that, data validation should, not business logic validation, but data validation should happen within the M, the model layer. And that's where the ORM sits. Well, what I would like to see is that the ORM looks and see there's a column constraint and then write code for me to check that column constraint automatically for me. But supposedly, I don't need to tell the ORM. What I do in this case is let the ORM connect to the database and generate this code, but it's not looking at the column constraint.
That's the IDE that generates that. It's a bad job.
Yeah. So, what else? Let's try to use a domain. Very simple domain. I only want any of those 3 values for a given column. So I create a column called foo of type foo domain. It's not null. And this is the generated code. Serializable. That's a Java interface. That's unusable. There's no concrete implementation for that. You have to do it everything by hand. It doesn't work. I mean, there's no way to get around this. So no luck. Still no luck. What I was saying before about joins and lazy loading. Suppose I have 2 tables, person and student. And student has a foreign key to person. If I try to generate the code, the generated code by default automatically is this one. And as you can see, well, there are some weird things, of course. There's also big decimal, very inefficient type. And finally, if you try to execute this code, code that just selects from one table, this is the code, the queries issued to the database. You first get one query for the table, and then for every foreign key you have, for every element on that table you have, there's another query. So you get n times m plus 1 queries, where n and m are the number of rows and the number of foreign keys. So that's a lot. Yeah, of course it is. But that's my point. By default, that's what you get. So, why is it so difficult to get it right? There's a very good article written by Ted Niewertz. I don't know if some of you have read this article, The Vietnam of ORMs. It's very good. It's lengthy, but it's very good. And it explains the problem, many of these problems. Why do they happen? And it compares what happened in the Vietnam War with ORMs. And in summary, what it happens is that at first, everything's easy. You start coding an ORM, and it's you progress very fast within, I don't know, some small amount of time. You have a lot of code that does a lot of things. But then the pace starts slowing down. And at the end, it's so hard to add a new single feature that you just give up. Something similar happened in the Vietnam War, letting political issues apart. So, and what he says, and it's very important, is that early successes yield a commitment to use ORM in places where success becomes more elusive, and over time isn't a success at all, due to the overhead of time and energy required to support it through all possible use cases. So, what he says is that there is a fundamental impedance mismatch between objects and their relational world, which are based on sets. And that's why probably most ORMs are going to fail, because they all are based on this assumption. And also there's no clear exit or solution. This subject is open. We don't really know what the good answer is. Myself, I wrote an ORM some time ago, and it's exactly the Vietnam of ORMs. This is a graph of the lines of code produced over time. As you can see, within the first 100 days, it wasn't a full-time project, but within the first 100 days, which is 20% of the time, 60% of the code was developed. It was easy. Then you start adding features, and you can see what happened. So, let's look for an exit strategy. As the first way to go is we have to break the rules. We have to think all the ways. Not start from scratch, but just break the rules. Let's do frugal or disruptive innovation. So, the first thing we have to do, we don't do ORM. We have to do ROM, relational to object mapping. We have to start from the database and they go to the application level, not the other way around. So this is the first point we have to go. Then, there's no real one-to-one mapping between fields and columns and relations and classes. That's not true. That's the very first assumption ORMs do, and it's not right. We have to work out a different model. Maybe, I don't know, maybe, my opinion, my guess, is that it should go the way of mapping data types to columns, and then considering classes or relations as a superset of some columns, as well as you do with some other queries. Now, what developers should do about ROMs? First, never create database schemas. I've already said this a lot of times. Then, ROMs should be able to create code from an existing database, connect to the database, and then generate automatic code. Then, all data validation, that was a question before, all data validation should happen in the ORM and also, of course, on the database, but the ORM may be able to do all those checks, okay? And we also need to support some advanced features of the database. Well, they're not that advanced, but they happen to be very difficult to use or impossible to use in nowadays ORMs, such as aggregates, function calls, custom data types, and so on. Now, what DBAs should do? First of all, they are the responsibles of creating the database, okay? Then, this is very important. My opinion, what DBA should do is define an API between them and the programmer. So, database, it's very complicated if it's done well and normalized for the programmers. Now, what we need to do is create a contract with them, an API, a contract-oriented programming, so that we hide those complicated database structure behind views, functions to insert or update data, and so on. And if that interface is well documented, and the programmer are also given the queries, so to obtain this information, do this query that in turn calls to a view or a function or whatever, then that API is going to be easy to use for the developers. Well, at the same time, gives you the flexibility to change the internal implementation of your database and even normalize it more, if you like, if you maintain your contract with the programmer. This is an old principle, nothing new, but just applied to the interface between database developers and programmers. And finally, and more important, is that so far, ORMs, or in my proposition, ROMs, are created by developers. But I think that DBA should be heavily involved in the development of ORMs, or ROMs in my new notation. So, what about PostgreSQL? Because so far I haven't mentioned PostgreSQL at all. What should we do? What's our role? It's very easy. First of all, DBAs, get involved. This is a huge problem nowadays, and it's growing. We have mentioned all the problems that ORMs create. So let's get involved. And indeed, the PostgreSQL is very open. Well, you know, we're BSD. So we have an open mind. And an open mind will help us to drive through new ways of thinking about how mapping between databases and applications should work. And of course, don't sit back and wait and just complain that ORMs are thrashing my database. No, just move on and react, because DBAs are losing their jobs in favor of programmers that are creating the database without even knowing a word of SQL. And of course, help joining and defining the possible new generation of ROMs that may appear in the world, and help to define the API that I was saying was interesting to create as an interface between the DBA and the programmer. So, conclusion. This is still an open debate. There is no clear exit solution. There are some identified problems. There are some proposed solutions. I don't know which one is the really real way to go. I've given some possible clues on how what is probably a good way to go, but it's still an open debate. So, to ORM or not to ORM? That was the question. So, programmers need an abstraction. That's completely true. And, well, as a programmer, I can say I need an abstraction. So the answer is yes, ORMs, but no, in a different way. First of all, ORM, ROM, not ORM. Then the DBA has to be done by the DBA. The database has to be done by the DBA and not the programmer. We have to rethink the one-to-one mapping between columns and fields of the class and tables and classes, because that's not true. It's an abstraction that doesn't hold true. We have to remove the bloat, such as all the effort required to implement querying languages inside the ORMs. It's a lot of effort just to do nothing. It's better just to issue direct query SQL and help the programmer map that to their objects and not lose time doing that kind of things that all are always behind what the real SQL does on the database. And finally, of course, offer some more advanced SQL features that nowadays ORMs are either not offering or offering in very hard ways that very few people, if at all, use them. And, well, that's it. We're a little bit over time, but if there's any other question, I'll be happy to answer or try to answer them. Yeah? Okay, so I think they'll...
So how do you measure the barrier to entry for becoming a DBMA and being able to write an SQL versus learning ORM?
Versus learning?
I think one of the things that ORM sells is not performance. It's accessibility.
Well, but...
I have no idea how to do database. Can't do it.
But that's very dangerous.
But they write code that becomes popular open source. And
but maybe it's just better... In my opinion, it's better a culture of small effort. So you learn a little bit, and then you can use it the right way. Because if you just don't want to learn, if it's too easy to use, and it creates a lot of problems, in my opinion, that's not worth. I think we'll have to go. Okay. So what I'll do is just answer the questions afterwards. Thank you very much.
Sure. At my organization, we ended up sort of rediscovering some of your exit strategy.
Uh-huh. Good.
Especially about the DBA.
SDAs, if you will, having to propose an API. But in our organization, we don't believe in DBAs. We believe in database developers.
Well,
the API that they have to propose is actually in a higher level language. It's always in Java. So the database developer proposes and provides a Java interface that represents the database and is responsible for balancing the tension of what's better done in the application, what's better done in the database. Because for certain things,